On the air at News Radio 1070 WKOK and online at WKOK.com. This is WKOK Sunrise.
And thank you so much for joining us on WKOK Sunrise. Mark Lawrence here, Rob Centers on the other side of the glass, taking great care of us. So we appreciate all of his help and hard work that he provides us on each day. He's why our podcast will be lined up shortly after our show. You'll be able to hear our interview in its entirety on the WKOK podcast page, Spotify, or wherever you download your podcasts. On the news line with us now, Dr. Edward Arthur Monaco III is with us. He's a brain and tumor specialist in the Department of Neurosurgery at Geisinger. So, Dr. Monaco, thank you so much for calling in.
Mark, it's I really appreciate the opportunity to chat with you, really about a very important topic that comes around occasionally or is brought to the spotlight when someone famous has a problem, but many, many Americans, adults and children, experience head injuries and brain trauma every day in this country.
Well, and I think Bob Saget is the person you talked about, somehow fractured the back of his skull and had some eye injuries as well, so may have even fallen twice over the course of his time in a hotel room, then went to sleep. So we know a little bit more about that today in terms of something that we can learn from that. What happened? What should we watch out for? Explains sort of the takeaway from that tragic incident.
Sure, it's hard to specifically speculate about any one individual's injury if I'm not clinically evaluating them. But you know, head injuries are very common. There are different kinds of head injuries where people have blunt trauma, or they hit their head, or something strikes their head. You know, unfortunately, there can be penetrating injuries if someone was to have a gunshot wound or something like that. The most common thing is blunt injuries where people strike their head. And they range in severity. There are very mild head injuries, things that we would describe as a concussion, a blow that kind of shakes the brain hard enough to reset it to some degree, all the way up to extremely severe head injuries that result in people's death, like Mr. Saget. And I think the major take-home message is that many of these are accidents, and the prevention of the head injury is avoiding the traumatic event, which can be really challenging. Avoiding the delayed or sequelae of these types of injuries really involves being aware of your own body, having people know that you hurt yourself. So, for instance, in a situation like Mr. Saget or another individual, if you had a head injury and you didn't think anything of it and you started to have symptoms like headaches or neurological symptoms where certain parts of your body didn't work so well, even stroke-like symptoms, or even a depressed level of consciousness, you are arousable but not completely so. These are things that you really want to, as a family member or someone observing it, or if you're a victim of a head injury, to be aware of and seek medical attention immediately if you have any concerns.
Well, what are the things that I'll watch for if I'm concerned about having had a serious head injury? What do I look for? What do I look out for? You know, sort of what's sort of the checklist that maybe I'll make?
Sure. The biggest challenge with head injury is that there's not one particular checklist. The brain has functions in different areas, and if those areas are injured with a head injury, then people can have symptoms related to dysfunction in that area. So in general, though, things like severe headaches or worsening headaches that are atypical after a head injury, loss of a particular neurological function, like if half the body became weak, or speech, you were unable to produce speech or speech was disturbed, if you are very confused, if you didn't know where you were or who you are, and also really a depressed level of consciousness. Someone who would normally be awake or easily arousable, and you just can't get them awake.
Well, for people who lead active lifestyles, they often may come across someone or may themselves have a significant head injury, and they may say, well, as long as I stay awake, even if it is a concussion, that's the protocol that will help me take good care of myself. Is there any truth to that? Just staying awake is part of it.
Well, I don't know that necessarily staying awake per se, that's not going to stop a head injury. Really, that notion of staying awake draws from a very stereotypical injury called an epidural hematoma, and that can happen when there's a skull fracture that tears a blood vessel between the coverings of the brain and the bone, and it's often talked about in athletes who get struck in the side of the head with a baseball or something to that effect. It fractures the skull, and they have an immediate response to the injury, and then they seem okay, and then hours later even, blood can slowly leak from the torn blood vessel and cause a large blood clot to form that compresses the brain and causes a neurological symptom. And so that's where this notion of kind of staying awake and keeping track of someone. I think that it's good to observe someone who does have a head injury, but I'll tell you, if someone has a concerning head injury and there are any kind of symptoms, really I would seek medical attention. They're not, even if you think, oh, it was nothing, I've seen head injuries in patients where they fell but didn't strike their head even, and they developed bleeding on their brain that required myself or one of my partners to operate. So the main thing is not to blow it off. If you have a head injury or a head trauma, you really want to make sure folks know about it. And if you have any concerns about it at all, it's very appropriate to bring it to medical attention.
So is there some inherent risk associated with going to sleep after you've had a concussion or a head injury, or is that just because you won't be able to monitor any of the good things that you told us to watch out for if you're sleeping?
Yeah, that's exactly it. There's no inherent risk of sleeping in and of itself with a head injury. It really is you won't be able to keep track of folks. And I'll tell you, in the hospital, when someone has a severe head injury and we're watching them, we perform neurological exams in our intensive care unit every hour to make sure we wake them up and check them and follow the status of their neurological exam. So it's really for monitoring. It's being able to tell, hey, has a deficit occurred? But you obviously can't discern when someone is asleep.
What other types of head injuries do folks get or sort of damage from head injuries? I should ask, you mentioned the blood clots, so we're going to watch out for that. What else can happen to the brain when you've had concussion or a head injury?
So concussions, I would say, are the mildest form of head injury in general on the spectrum, all the way up to very severe injuries that just destroy or damage large parts of the brain. And the main thing that happens with more severe head injuries is bleeding, and it depends on where the bleeding is. Bleeding can happen in the brain tissue. We call that a contusion, and that can destroy parts of the brain and cause neurological difficulties. There is blood or bleeding that happens or occurs outside the brain. It can bleed just on the surface of the brain, which we call a subarachnoid hemorrhage, and we distinguish traumatic subarachnoid hemorrhages from other forms of subarachnoid hemorrhage. And then there's what's called a subdural hematoma, which is a blood clot that forms underneath the coverings of the brain, just above the surface of the brain, which can produce mass effect on the brain. There's blood in the epidural space, which I mentioned, an epidural hematoma. And then, you know, you can have injuries with high-speed things. I've seen patients in motorcycle crashes and car accidents that have an injury called diffuse axonal injury. And it's a very complex injury that happens because the brain is made up of different densities of tissue that accelerate and decelerate at different rates, and it can actually shear the brain tissue and disconnect different parts of the brain. And that's a really, you don't see anything that, you can't take the pressure off the brain with a surgery. There's not much you can do about it, and it takes a long time if those patients recover to reset their brain. And sometimes if they've torn many areas of the brain and disconnected it, they don't really recover so well.
Well, and on that exact same topic, what about repetitive injury of that nature? If I'm racing, or I think you said motorcycle riding, and I do that once or twice, or, you know, maybe more times, or I'm participating in motor sports where it might happen again.
So I would say in general, we think about repetitive head injury. If you have severe repetitive head injuries, it's going to be a major problem. And, you know, many times, unfortunately, folks who have severe head injuries don't recover enough even to get back to riding their motorcycle. And many folks, unfortunately, pass away, all too many. In terms of repetitive head injuries, you know, from sporting events, I have three kids who all play soccer. I did a little bit of work for professional sports, hockey and football, and the repetitive injuries that we think about are repetitive concussions or more mild head injuries. Maybe you don't even notice them. And I'm acutely aware, I think, about watching my kids play sports, and only in the last decade or so have we thought a lot about having repetitive head injuries. And certainly the biggest thing is you want to avoid them, and especially in young people, even mild to moderate head injuries that repeat themselves very quickly, two concussions in short order within the same sporting event can, and it's shown up in the popular press, we've heard about children or young adults even dying from that because of swelling in their brain. So the biggest message I can tell you is, and it's really hard to do this, is you want to avoid head injury as much as possible and be smart about it. And I think a lot of youth sport groups and even professional sports are trying to do things to change the rules. For instance, in youth soccer, they don't let young kids head the ball. And I think that that's appropriate in their developing brain, and they don't have the musculature in their neck to do it appropriately. So it's avoiding it. That's the biggest thing. And if you do have a head injury, really you don't want to go back to doing anything with regard to that sport until you're completely asymptomatic, completely recovered from the injury.
Well, and I think you mentioned on a personal note that your kids play some sports where contact is part of it. So that'll be our last question. What about parents? What do you say to parents when they ask you about some of these contact sports?
Well, that's a really good question. It's a very personal thing. I grew up playing soccer, and all three of my kids play soccer. My kids, especially my youngest, is asked about playing football and these kinds of things. And I'm very wary about sports where head injury is very prominent. Certainly soccer, it can happen, but I am acutely aware of it. And I would tell parents that if they're going to let their kids play certain sports, they just need to be extremely observant and careful about it. And don't blow it off. It's not like the old days you hear about college athletes having a concussion and coach throws them back into the game. Head injury is a really important problem, and we're hearing about professional athletes having repeated concussions over the course of their youth and into their young adulthood, and it really can affect them with diseases like traumatic encephalopathy or CTE. So I would say to parents, frankly, you know, think very carefully about what kinds of things you want your child to do, and really be careful, cautious, and observant about your child playing a sport that is a contact sport. You really want to try to avoid multiple head injuries as much as you can.
Well, thank you so much for your information. We're going to have to leave it there, but I have a dozen more questions, so please, let's meet up again in the months ahead, and we'll continue this conversation. I have to ask you and your peers about COVID fog at some time, because we know that that's real and that's ongoing, so please make a note of it that we'll be back in contact with you. Thank you very much for Erica, your good colleague, who helped get us connected to you. We appreciate it. Thank you, Doctor.
Mark, thank you so much. It was a pleasure and an honor. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you so much. That is Dr. Edward Arthur Monaco III, a brain and tumor specialist at Geisinger. He's in the Department of Neurosurgery, and as you heard, brain injuries, very much something part of his protocols and specialities. We will talk to him again in the weeks and months ahead about some additional topics, Alzheimer's, COVID, repetitive concussions, that CTE that he mentioned, and strokes. So, and there's some new research related to this. So we'll be back in contact with him in the weeks and months ahead.